Hello, I'm Liam Messin, and welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast from The Lancet Global Health. We recently published a paper looking at an example of implementation research. In this instance, the implementation of integrated care for depression, diabetes, and hypertension in Malawi. I sat down to speak with two of the authors of the paper, Michael Adidi and Kazone Kulisowa, but I can just have them introduce themselves.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kazone Kulisowa. I'm a psychiatrist, and I head the Department of Psychiatry and Mental Health at Malawi's Seoul Medical University, Kamuzu University of Health Sciences. Thank you.
I'm also joined by Michael. Would you like to introduce yourself as well for our listeners?
Hello, everyone. My name is Michael Dedi. I work with the Ministry of Health in Malawi as the desk officer for mental health in the ministry. Thank you.
Cool. And thank you very much, both of you, for joining us. So we're here today to discuss a paper you've recently published in The Lancet Global Health. And that paper was on the topic of implementation science. So perhaps just to make sure everyone's up to speed, Kazone, you could begin by just telling us, what do we mean by implementation science?
So I guess the definition, if you were to pick up a journal and try and Google what implementation science would be, the definition would probably fall something along these lines. Implementation science is a scientific study of methods or strategies that promote the systematic uptake of research findings and evidence-based practices into routine practice. In other words, we're saying if a clinical trial or research has identified that there's an intervention that's effective, how do we then take this research finding and then translate it into routine clinical care? So traditionally, I guess what's happened is that, research findings will be published in a paper. A couple of years later on, maybe a provider or policymaker might, be on PubMed or on a database looking at interventions. They will identify this research, this intervention, then they will choose to integrate it into their practices. So this is kind of a passive process. Implementation science is more of an active process where you're looking at what are the specific strategies that you can employ to accelerate the uptake of these interventions by providers, and also how can you measure how effective these strategies are at promoting the use of evidence-based practices.
So you spoke about implementation science is taking an intervention, a method, a practice, what have you, and then, you know, seeing how that can be used, implemented in a policy way or a clinical setting. What sort of evidence, though, are we looking for initially? How do we know which practices are worth trying to implement?
So I think when looking at the findings from a study, you probably want to look at things like the population, the study population, and then you try and see the study population in that study. Are they do they have characteristics which are similar to the population where you want to apply your intervention? If there are similarities between that population and your own population, then one can conclude that an intervention that was efficacious in that population may similarly be efficacious in your population as well. And then the second thing you probably want to look at is the efficacy of that intervention. How efficacious was that intervention? And is that will give you some pointers to whether it's going to be efficacious also in your setting. Then obviously there are other interventions as well. Sorry, there are other indicators as well, which you might want to think about. For instance, like cost effectiveness is something that, especially in a low and middle income country, you need to think about. An intervention may be efficacious, but if it's too expensive or if it's too complex to implement, then that becomes a bit more of a challenge. So I think these are some of the things that you look at. Is that intervention, can it be, are the results from that study applicable to your population? Is that intervention efficacious? And also about cost effectiveness. Michael maybe can also chip in terms of what are the initial things that you'd be looking for.
Thank you, Kaz. I think you managed to cover good ground. But I'll just add that probably you're looking at that evidence-based practice or findings, which we feel would be able to improve health outcomes in case of health. And it has been probably done probably in a clinical trial, but you know that implementation science recognizes that there are fundamental differences between the way the care is delivered in a clinical trial in a research setting and compared to what happens in the real world. So with that evidence finding, it will be in a better position to be tried or implemented in an implementation study so that you are able to understand the reward setting. Thank you.
Oh, no, thank you very much for your answer. And maybe, Michael, if we could just stay on you then. What sort of things in an implementation study are you looking for? I mean, you're with the Ministry of Health. So what sort of things are you testing in an implementation study to make sure the intervention now works in a more real world setting?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So we're looking at the methodologies which are they appropriate methodologies which were used in a particular study so that they can be scaled up or replicated. Otherwise, you don't want to get something which probably they were inappropriate, but probably they're just talking about good results or evidence. But also look, we have to make sure that we have an appropriate standard methodology, but also it should have a proper evaluation plan to be able to evaluate that implementation study so that whatever outcome it has to have, and it has to be concrete, but also it can be scaled up and replicated elsewhere. So those are some of the things which we kind of focus from implementation studies.
Thank you very much. And maybe now, Calzone, you could take us through the implementation study you've just published with us, the SHARP. Give our audience a brief overview of the SHARP cluster randomized trial we've just published.
Thanks, Liam. So briefly, I think there are a lot of efficacious interventions for depression. Not all of them are suitable for the Malawian context, for the reasons that maybe Michael has also mentioned. But here in Malawi, we've got a high burden of depression in individuals who have hypertension and depression. For most of these individuals who have depression, and are living with hypertension and diabetes, most of these individuals have previously not been receiving any treatment for that. So the SHARP trial was largely looking at how best can we integrate evidence-based interventions for depression into routine clinical care for people who are living with non-communicable diseases such as hypertension and diabetes. So in essence, the basic strategy that we had was that we trained what we defined as champions. These were three providers who were highly motivated at the facility. So we trained these three providers and to be the champions who would oversee or champion the integration of depression screening and management at their facility. They received intensive training in depression screening with the patient health questionnaire 9. They also received intensive training in how to manage depression using antidepressants, using an algorithm-guided model of care known as measurement-based care. And they were trained to provide antidepressant management for people with moderate to severe depression, while those with mild depression were to receive a form of psychosocial counseling, which has been developed in the region, which is known as the Friendship Bench. So this was the basic implementation strategy where you'd have the intervention champions. They would be responsible for training all providers at their facility, and also they'd be responsible for all mental health integration activities at their facility. So they were responsible for the quality assurance at the facility. Now, half of the clinics received this basic strategy. The other half of the clinics received enhanced strategy. And the enhanced strategy was basically the same basic strategy that I spoke about. But in addition to this, they also received external supervision. So the external supervision was a quality assurance team that visited the facility each quarter. The quality assurance team was responsible for meeting with the leadership at the facility, discussing any implementation challenges that they might have experienced. The quality assurance team would also conduct an audit of the clinical activities that are happening. This would include direct observation of care. It would include reviewing all the medical records of patients seen in the last quarter. And then they would give supportive supervision if required. And then they'd give feedback to the facility on how well implementation was going and what were some of the challenges. So in summary, I think these were the two strategies that we used, basic strategy with just champions, and then enhanced strategy, which consisted of champions and an external quality assurance team.
Yeah, probably I can just add that with the internal champion strategy, I think it helped to improve the screening and treatment initiation. However, I think what we noted with the enhanced strategy where we had external supervision, there was an improvement in terms of increased follow-up, but also improved mental health outcomes of the clients who were attending the clinic. So these two strategies helped in terms of the study, but also gave us an opportunity to understand how this can be implemented in a low-resource setting like Malawi. And probably Kaz would be able to add more on what this has led to. Probably I'll just say that it had led to a new study which has come out of the previous study. So this enhanced strategy is one of those strategies which probably might need more support because there's an element of cost implication, especially for supervision of the champions. Thank you.
Yes, and that was actually going to be my next question, actually. So, I mean, you've detailed, both of you, thank you very much, a very, very interesting study, right? You've taken a lot of steps. We've got these champions. We've got, we're using counseling developed in the region, and you've got this additional quality of care, kind of, you know, external checking of the program. Now, the aim of implementation science, at least as I understand it, is the hope to, you know, to see how we can take these interventions into practice, into policy. So is that the next step for this? How far away do you think we are, either of you, from this, you know, the interventions like those making its way to patients outside of a trial setting?
Thanks, Liam. So as Michael said, there are challenges in implementation science. When you take an evidence-based intervention that's been developed in a controlled research setting of a clinical trial, there are certain barriers that you face when trying to implement it in the real world. So in the context of SHARP, our study, I think some of these barriers can be broken. I mean, we can basically divide these barriers into structural barriers, where it's the health system, and also individual barriers. So for instance, structural barriers would be that Malawi is a low and middle income country. We've got a high burden of infectious diseases such as HIV, tuberculosis. So these infectious diseases are actually competing priorities. So if the health system perceives that infectious diseases are what it should really be prioritizing, when you're bringing in an evidence-based intervention for depression, sometimes the health system doesn't recognize how important depression is. Their focus is largely on the infectious diseases. So I think these are some of the structural barriers that I think we probably faced. In terms of individuals, I think, again, competing priorities is something that we did face in the context of SHARP. Our providers tend to be quite burdened with multiple clinical roles. So in having to balance these multiple clinical roles, there's sometimes competing priorities for their time. Another barrier can be a lack of knowledge or skill to implement the evidence-based intervention. Traditionally in Malawi, mental health services have pretty much always worked in a silo. And right now we are trying to integrate mental health into many aspects of primary health. So many providers are actually very unfamiliar with depression screening. They're very unfamiliar with the use of screening tools such as the Patient Health Questionnaire 9. Similarly as well, they don't really have a lot of knowledge on how to use antidepressants or the role of psychosocial counseling in treating depression. And then another challenge can be the perceived complexity of the evidence-based intervention. If a provider thinks that this intervention that's being introduced is too complex, they are less willing and less likely to adopt it. So in terms of, I think the challenges that we face in implementing, these are the, I think, type of challenges or barriers that we face. Michael can probably also speak, as he's a policymaker, can also speak a little bit about how it impacts policy.
All right. Thank you so much. Yeah, I think just to add on these challenges, I think one of the challenges was also the issue of the district management to supervise or to support the champions. That was a challenge, and it's something which we've taken note and we've included it in a new program or a new project, which is focusing on capacitating the leadership to make sure that they're able to support the implementing champions so that we minimize these challenges which the champions or the providers face in the clinics whenever we are integrating mental health. But also at the same time, the other challenge, I think, is that of resources, and in this particular, we're talking about medication. Remember, as Dr. Kusewa says, this is a world source country whereby there are competing issues, infectious versus non-communicable, and in particular, mental health, which has got its own challenges. So some facilities were having some challenges in terms of accessing the antidepressants which were supposed to be provided to the clients. So in this case, if the leadership was not providing enough support, then definitely the champions would fail to run the clinics properly. They would be able to screen, but in times of giving medication, then it became a challenge. So that's a challenge which we had faced in terms of implementing the study, the implementation study in our case.
Thank you very much. From both of your answers, it seems to me a more overarching problem, and I don't think this is unique to Malawi at all, is the deprioritization of mental health issues. I mean, as you said, Kazone, that it, you know, if you have infectious diseases, that's competing, and you have that combined with a lack of knowledge or a perceived complexity. So what do you think can be done? I don't think this is just for Malawi. What do you think can be done to move mental illnesses, I guess, up the agenda? Kazone, if you want to take that first, then we can go to Michael.
Yeah, so I think, to be fair to the to the Ministry of Health, I think we are actually doing probably much better than we were maybe a decade ago. So yes, there are competing priorities in terms of infectious diseases, in terms of maternal health. Malawi is one of the countries which has got the highest maternal mortality in the world. Got competing problems in terms of child and adolescent health as well. Relatively high infant mortality rates as well. But despite that, I think we are making positive strides with regards to mental health in Malawi. And I think a lot of credit should be taken to the people who are advocating for this, Michael being one. So I think the government has been quite intentional about investing more in mental health, making sure that mental health is integrated at primary health levels. So even though we aren't where we'd like to be, I think we're generally moving in the right direction with a lot of emphasis and a lot of investment in mental health. And a lot of this has also been, a lot of the investment in mental health has also been through our research partners who have also been very supportive in terms of policy and in terms of trying to prioritize mental health. So I think the research partners, for instance, the University of North Carolina, partners who we have longstanding collaborations with them from, I think, maybe 2015, 2016, in terms of mental health, who are helping to support our efforts to prioritize mental health.
Thank you very much. And I'm very, very glad to hear that things have improved over the last decade through the work of the ministry and these external partners. So maybe, Michael, just as the last question, what do you think the next decade holds for mental health in Malawi?
Yeah, I think as kind of, Dr. Glisewa has indicated, I think there's been much improvement in terms of mental health. So I think the next decade, I feel that things will greatly improve, because currently we have a new mental health policy, which was done in 2020, around which is advocating for integration. And we are seeing a lot of integration which is happening. And for instance, we've talked about integration in non-communicable care like diabetes and hypertension, which we have now moved on to other infectious diseases. We are promoting integration in TB as well as HIV care, but also indeed in cancer care, and going beyond that, even in maternal health. So looking at that, we'd see that we are getting evidence from different research activities, as Dr. Kulisewa has indicated that our partners are also investing in research, and we're getting those evidence-based practices to enrich our policies and strategies to make sure that in the next decade, we're able to improve the mental health of our general population, and that also we are able to identify those individuals who are attending to our clinics, either for any general health condition or for chronic conditions, but we should be able to identify and provide necessary care. And indeed, another aspect is that of psychotherapy, problem-solving therapy, which we are implementing to make sure that individuals don't only go for medication, but also receive those problem-solving therapies so that they are able to manage their lives without necessarily getting the medication. And moving forward, we would make sure that mental health is mainstreamed everywhere, including at workplace, in schools, so that people are aware of mental health issues, but also they can prevent mental illnesses, but also we can promote mental health among the population so that they are productive. So I think the future looks brighter from now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I mean, I think the phrase and the idea of mainstreaming mental health is one we can definitely agree with here at The Lancet. And yes, I look forward to seeing this. We'll have to get you back both on the podcast in a decade's time to see how it's gone. But for now, I'll just thank you both for taking part in the interview. And yeah, best of luck for the future.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ria.
And all that's left is to thank our two interviewees and to thank you for listening. The article can be found on thelancet.com, and this podcast can be found wherever it is you normally get your podcasts.